Today on the podcast, Sam and I are joined by Dr. Anca Dolley, a rural GP in South Australia who works alongside her therapy dog Jessie when seeing patients. Dr. Anca already had previous therapy dog experience and training before she connected with Therapy Dogs Australia and shares how she incorporated methods she learned with us into her existing toolkit. Enjoy. Hello and welcome back to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. I'm Max, the social media manager for Therapy Dogs Australia, and I've got Sam, my co-host here, who's the owner of Therapy Dogs Australia. How are you going, Sam?
Good, thank you, Max. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We're also joined today by Dr. Anca Dolley, who's a GP and a TDA graduate as well. I'm going to hand everyone over to Anca.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for having me on your show. So my name is Anca Dolley. As you mentioned, I live in South Australia in a rural community on the beautiful Fleurieu Peninsula. And I've been working here for 27 years in a general practice setting. And recently have done my clinical intensive course with TDA in April. And very much enjoyed it. It was an eye-opener. So I was very happy to share some of my experiences today.
Well, obviously, lovely to have you joining us.
Thank you. So obviously, as you can hear, I'm not Australian. So I migrated from Germany in 1991. That's a long story. We won't go there. And did my general practice training in South Australia and decided to work in a rural community as there was more scope to do things in general practice. So,
yeah. And then the therapy dog idea came along somehow. How did that pop up for you?
Well, I had four dogs in my life. Our first dog lived for 16 years in us. He was a Border Collie Cape Cross and was a beautiful dog. Second one we adopted died after a year. The third one was very upsetting. So I thought, maybe I should learn to cope a bit better with loss. So I decided to foster a hearing dog puppy, something I always wanted to do. And because he was a service dog in training, I actually could take him to work. Mm-hmm. He was gorgeous, a little bit on the nippier side, but absolutely beautiful puppy. So I had to keep him away from my patients. I felt it wasn't such a safe thing to do. However, what I noticed was that the atmosphere in the consulting room had changed. And I couldn't initially put my finger on it. So particularly young neurodivergent patients, kids mm-hmm. with ADHD, or with Asperger's, they were just more settled in the room. And similar patients with anxiety, they seemed to be more at ease. And there were a few very beautiful stories. One patient who had very high blood pressure, when I took it, I sent her to our nurse's station just for somebody else to take it after she's been sitting for 10 minutes. And what happened was it was still high. So I checked on her, it was still high. And she sort of cried out, "If you would just let me touch that dog, I would be fine."
Sounds like something I would say.
So I said, okay, fine. I go and get the dog, but you know, I can't take any responsibility. Well, it's a silly thing to say, but I said, "Look, you know he's nippy." She said, "I don't care, he won't nip me." I said, "Okay. Well, let's try." So she held that puppy and he was beautiful. You know, he didn't wriggle. He was really good. And then the nurse took the blood pressure again. So if you want to have an independent observer, and the blood pressure had dropped from 185 to 150, which was, you know, massive, which was pretty amazing. So I thought, very interesting. I would have thought it would have stayed the same because having a puppy would be very exciting. But, you know, this little boy was very, very well behaved. And I started thinking, and then I started reading about therapy dogs, and I started doing my research. I love reading things and getting to know things a bit better. And there is quite a bit of literature. And at the similar time, I think they were advertising at the Adelaide airport, they were having a dog within the airport just to help people who were anxious about flying and so on, that they were able to have some contact with that dog. And then there was obviously in the Adelaide courts, they have got a therapy dog there as well and passed away. So then there was this sort of search for another therapy dog. Then I came across the Women's and Children's Hospital who've got therapy dogs in their occupational health program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the plot was thickening. So I thought, well, what can I do when I have to give little Lee back? His name was Lee. And I thought, well, there needs to be plan B because number one, yes, I will be a little bit upset, obviously. You know, we had this puppy for quite a while. But also, this is something which has helped my patients. So why not researching things a little bit more, how I can actually accommodate a therapy dog in general practice. So then last year I did a course with La Trobe University, Animal Assisted Therapy for Health Professionals, which was very good, but more theory based. And I felt that was good. So I knew more now, I had more background there, but I really needed to know how do I actually train a dog to have him with me and interact safely within guidelines in a medical setting.
Yeah.
And then I came across Therapy Dogs Australia, and that's now where we are, basically.
Here we are.
Was that this year? That was this year, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that lots of people say to us as well, is that they are looking for that more sort of practical integration of, but how do I train the dog and understand how to implement the dog in the practice of whatever they're doing as well? So that's, yeah, interesting to hear you say that as well. There you go. Okay, and so can you introduce us? Who's your dog? What's his age, sure. his breed?
I have him actually here. So his name is Jesse. His second birthday will be in August.
Oh, cute.
And he is an Australian cobber dog. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting journey as well, because for this setting, I wanted to make sure that my dog was hypoallergenic, because I have got some patients who have got various allergies, and I wanted him to look not scary. So, you know, fluffy fur is always good.
A fluffy teddy bear.
A fluffy teddy bear is always good. And the hearing dog was a Labradoodle, and he was quite prey driven, as they often have to be as service dogs.
Yeah.
I felt I needed a dog who was really laid back and settled. So did my research, made my decision to contact Rutland's cobber dogs and ask the breeder to choose an appropriate temperament dog for me. So I didn't put any stipulations on sex, color, or so. I just needed the right temperament.
That's awesome that you felt confident to ask for that, because I think a lot of people don't really know what to ask for when they do want a therapy dog. Like, they might be focused on the things that don't really matter, but temperament, is a really important thing to focus on. So
it makes things so much.
I was going to say that's a good segue, Max, so that Dr. Anka can give us a little bit of her background in dog knowledge as well, because you didn't come into it completely clueless, which, you know, did put you a few steps ahead of some of the other people, because we do in our courses put a lot of focus on becoming, I don't say an expert in dogs, I say an expert in your dog, because you're becoming a professional dog handler. So, but Anka already knew quite a bit. So do you want to tell us, like, what was your previous experience with dogs, dog training, that sort of thing?
Well, obviously with the service dog puppy, this is a very supportive environment. So every second week we had meetings with a dog trainer. And because I live rurally, we were only two, so we had very intensive meetings, and then later on it was one-on-one. So, you know, the whole handling, how to handle a service dog, was very well explained, though it was mainly socialization. So I didn't have to do any sound training or anything like this. My job, so to speak, was to expose this puppy to as many situations, noises, surfaces, whatever there is, you know, sitting at a very busy road, sitting next to the ambulance station. Now, he came with me to a first aid course. Machines were going everywhere. So, you know, just making sure that I was exposing this puppy. And then any problems I had, I was able to discuss with the trainer. So that was really helpful. Then when I got Jesse, I started enrolling him in into obedience classes September last year. But I must say, I found the techniques a bit forceful. Let's maybe say it this way. I felt it wasn't, because he's quite sensitive, pulling hardly on the leash or giving those corrections didn't sort of sit quite well with me. And there were different, you know, different trainers, depending who you had different, had also different ideas. So not everybody was telling you to just do lead corrections. But I just felt there must be a better way to train a dog than corrections, because corrections are usually given when a behavior occurs which you don't want. So, you know, maybe one could actually get in early. It's like a traffic light system. So green, you can go, orange, well, you better put the brakes on, and red, you definitely stop. And I felt it was a reaction to red rather than explaining to the dog where the green is, where the orange is.
That's a good metaphor, because it will be interesting for us to talk through how you found our training and the tools that we have and we use, and how you integrated those with your existing, you know, so you weren't a like clean slate, clueless person just ready to be told sort of what to do, which some people are, and that's fine. We're happy with that. But one of the challenges that we can have actually is when people are more informed and knowledgeable and have already got their way of doing things, and they can be a little bit rigid about incorporating the therapy dog training side of things into what they're already doing. Like, I do find that people, and so whether they've been into dog sports or, you know, obedience trialing or whatever it is that they've already, that their dog careers that they've already got or have already had, or even just terminology. So some people can get really caught up on, we're not using leave it, you know, we're just using our tone. That doesn't mean that I'm saying you can never say leave it to your dog ever again. I don't care what you do at your house. Like, or we don't use at the dogs. I don't care if you do that at your house. Like, it's, you can do whatever you want. So I've been explaining to people that it's kind of like, this is your therapy dog training, just like you have your agility training. So just because you've got these extra things that your dog knows, that you've taught them through your agility training, that doesn't mean that you have to forget and let go of everything else you've ever taught your dog. And the stuff that we're teaching the dogs is quite basic as well. So we're not asking for a huge amount of learning or performance from the dogs. So they don't really have to unlearn the other stuff. Like, it can kind of be either strengthening what people already have, or some people don't have anything on their dogs, like their dogs can't do anything, so they're sort of starting from scratch. But we do use corrections, so we're using lead corrections, leash pops, that stuff like that. But maybe you can explain to people, Anka, like, okay, so you know, maybe the school that you went to might have been maybe a little bit more old school in the way that they did things, but we're actually in a position where in the working space, so in the clinical space, we don't want to use corrections on the dogs because people get upset. So, but the dogs will do things at times that are not welcomed by either us or the environment or the client. And maybe you've got some examples. I know you've only been doing it for a couple of months, but some examples of things that maybe they're actually okay dog things to do. Like, it's like, this is normal dog behavior. Yep. But we need to now change the course of what that behavior is. But we can't actually just, you know, snap them on the, you know, collar on the lead or anything like that, because we're in a professional setting, and the client or the patient might not even be the one that's offended by what's going on. Like they might be like, so then if we jump in and, you know, tell the dogs no or whatever, then in the session, then that can even be rupturing for the relationship that we have with the client as well. If they're sort of thinking like, oh, why, you know, being so controlling of your dog? Like, I want them to do all these things that we're doing.
Yes. So to come back to your question, to integrate this, for example, sometimes you, if I see, for example, a young female patient who has her periods, the dog will know, because their nose is 10,000 to 100,000 times more sensitive than our. And as dogs do, it's a friendly greeting. They want to go to areas where it's not acceptable to go from a human convention. No. So rather than getting very, rather than being sort of on a, telling him no or leave it, which is really, leave it is very abrasive also to a patient, you know, leave it, you call a patient it, which is very inappropriate. But also then leave, it means
if they're
I'm
smelling
taking...
If they're smelling a crutch as well, and you say leave it to a crutch, you're, I find I would die inside if I was the patient and I had my period and the dog was like in my crutch. I'd be like, like, this is awkward enough. Even though I'm like in my older age, I'm like, whatever, dogs sniff stuff. But certainly as a younger woman, I would have been like, Lord help me, get me out of here. And then if the person was like, leave it at the dog, I would have been like, okay, bye.
Yes.
Get out your paddles, because I'm having a heart attack and I've just died of embarrassment. So lucky you're a doctor.
Look, it's, you know,
go blue.
It just, it's not appropriate, you know. And so instead of leave it, I notice when the nose wants to go to a place where I don't want his nose to go, I just say, good boy. And then he looks at me, okay, oh, but I don't do that. You know, so it is a correction, but it's not said with an abrasive tone. It's just that good boy. Whereas, you know, then if he does the right thing, oh, good boy. And, you know, you just let him know when things are not so right, but you also then acknowledge when they're doing the right thing. I think that's something which was really important for me to remember, that I also always have to notice the good behavior and praise him for that, because otherwise it is just, you know, going from one correction to the next correction. And that makes work quite joyless. If I would put myself into the dog's situation, you know, it needs to be a little bit of fun.
Yeah, we have got that problem. We talked about it now a couple of podcasts ago, where people are getting, they're just focused so much on trying to get the dog to not do things that they don't want them to do. They're forgetting. So what Anka's talking about is we use our tone of voice, but it's a continuation cue. And that's probably where it means discontinue or continue. Whereas your end markers, your no, or your, we use a free as a release, or you might use yes or something like that. They're end markers. So they mean that the activity's ended. So we don't really have much use for end markers in our work, because we are always guiding an interaction, and it's a continuing, ongoing interaction. This is not like walking your dog down the street and, you know, someone wants to pat him, so you tell him to sit and then off you go. Like, this is over the course of, in my setting, 50 minutes. In Yonka's setting, it's probably different depending on what people have got going on. But that continuation cue of like, okay, so you're heading in the wrong direction now, dog. So, you know, we need to move back from there. But then being able to, as soon as you have given the dog a clue as to like, so that's the wrong direction, and they move away, then you can straight away give them that continuation cue of that's the right direction. And what happens is the dog is then able to re-engage in the situation with the client, with all those that the greeting that they're having. You don't have to so if like the dog's sniffing someone's crutch, you don't have to put them on their mat, and because that removes the dog from the interaction completely. And so now not only has the dog sniffed my period crutch and the person's like leave it at the dog, but now they've put the dog on the mat and I'm not allowed to pat the dog at all. Like that, as the patient, I would be like, this sucks.
Yeah, it's rupturing.
Hate everything about this. One of the things I just thought of as well is how like you so Jesse's a sensitive dog, isn't he?
Yes,
Like
that's
as and
correct.
we mean by that, so Jesse is very like biddable, like wants to
Yes,
please.
it is.
He wants to get the answer right. And he's got a great attitude, like he's got a good work ethic. So he's
Yes,
got
he
a
does.
good, yeah, his attitude, I would say he's got like driviness in his eagerness to please, like a lab, like a typical Labrador.
Yes.
And in that, so when we say sensitive, we mean sensitive in that way, not sensitive
Yes.
as in like frightened
Oh,
by
no,
things.
no, no.
I've got a sensitive dog as well, and getting all the way to the no is not necessary for those dogs. They're trying to stay away from the no, and the no is where there's usually going to be some kind of, whether it's a collar correction or a leash pop or something like that, but they are actually trying to avoid that. That's who they are. Like they like seem to get it on another level. Not only are they like, oh, I don't want to get a lead pop, but they're also like, oh, I don't want to like get the answer wrong. Like they want to get the answer right. And so when Anka's describing having this ability to warn him, all he and my border collie is exactly the same. All he needs, even if I look at my border collie in a certain way, any border collie owners are probably going to really relate to this. You just look at them a certain way and they're like, oh, I'm sorry. Like,
Oh
oh,
no.
my goodness. Like
Okay.
this, mine's 9, turning 9. By the time Sonny was 9, he had turned his ears off. Like he was like, okay, well, I don't know what anything is and I can't hear you. Oliver's 9 and he is like, I don't have to do anything with it. Like anything I say, he's like, yes, mummy. Okay, mummy. Yes, mummy. I love you, mummy. Mummy, I love
Cute.
you. Will you make eye contact with me, mummy? I love you, mummy. Mummy. And Sonny's like, where's my bowl? And I'm like, I don't know. So I really like that. Whereas some dogs aren't. Like some dogs are more I pick on the Cavoodles a bit, but they are famous for it. Where they're more like, what can I get away with here? Like,
Yeah.
how close can I get? And that they're not trying to stay away from the no. They're like, I wonder what the consequence with the no will be. And if it's going to outweigh the natural reinforcement of what this thing is that I feel like doing right now.
Yes, certainly. No, he has his moments where he tries that as well because he's young. You know, he's just when we did this course, he was only, let me quickly think, 20 months old. So, you know, still an adolescent, but even in this time, he's just calmed even more. So it's just easy now. But
That's so
they still
fun
try.
because they really are like when they're in their prime, when they are sort of like 3 to 4 years old, I reckon. And it is just so much fun. Like, that's when all your training, like, you always obviously have to keep training your dogs, but that's when everything seems to just come together, and you just really, everything's great. Like everything's going well, and you're just enjoying each other so much, and you've really got their personality down. And yeah, it's really cool to have that foundation that you've already got now. And, having him at the practice and all that, I think you guys are going to have a a really nice career.
We should.
Sounds like a great team.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we talked about integrating some of those tools. So is there anything else, how else have you found maybe using your tone of voice or being able to redirect, or how do you hide that you're saying good boy? That's a question that we get a lot. How do we, we're saying you're a good boy for sniffing someone's crotch. We get that question a lot.
Well, you try to stop the sniffing before it happens, you know. So I think this is the thing we also discussed during the course, you know, how do you practice safely and do not get distracted by having an animal in your room? And fortunately, when I look at my patient, I can see out of the corner of my eye if Jesse is approaching in the wrong way. And then I can, you know, give him a little bit of a warning. You better don't do that. And then it's fine. You know, it's just, I'm just giving him an orange traffic signal. And then when he moves in the right way, you know, I can say, oh, good boy. And, you know, he knows, okay, fine. I won't do that then again. It was interesting when I had, because we also have to have temperament assessments just to make sure that the dog is safe to work. And when the temperament assessor came to assess Jessie, I wanted to show her what tone of voice does. So we're doing a few things, but then I also threw his favorite toy. And then she said, you know, again, I don't want to say it too loudly because he's sleeping here and I don't want him to think that I'm having a go at him. So I said, good boy. Oh, good boy. And then, you know, he stopped midway in almost, that's, you know, cool, almost in air when he was going for that toy. And then Brianna said, oh, but he said good boy, why doesn't he go to the toy? And then I thought, well, you know, this is the just amazing smart. Because I had the same question when I started the course, why does the good boy stop him? But this is English, you know, dogs don't speak natural English. They listen to the music. And it's like, if you, for example, in German, we have a saying, der Ton macht die Musik, which means the tone creates the music. So if you play something in D major or D minor, it's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And if I change my tone of voice, the dog gets it. And I think I read somewhere, it doesn't even matter if you go to Japan or to any other country in the world, as soon as you use a certain tone of voice, the dogs will actually get it. And when I practiced with Jessie, we were actually having a getaway in a country town. And I had to do some filming for TDA. And I was walking Jessie along a fairly busy main road and there were other dogs. And then when we came towards other dogs, I would say, good boy, again in the warning tone, but reasonably loudly at that stage. I hadn't learned the finesse yet of it all. Yep. And I actually noticed that sometimes other dogs would just sort of stop and
listen.
I thought,
as
oh,
well.
This is really funny. This is hilarious. You know?
How I do it to I know. Do it random dogs all the time. Yeah. works well.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It is. And it does take depending on the dog. It does take more tone early on, definitely. But we're trying to get, this is, you know, I talk about the rehearsal versus the show. And when we're in that the teaching stage of, you know, the dog's understanding, hey, listen, the tone's going to escalate and then there's going to be a consequence of some sort at the end of it. So when you hear the tone, like it's like a conditioned response almost where they go like, oh, okay. But I can see a response in dogs before they've had any experience. Like I do it with puppies, like baby puppies that have never had any kind of correction in their life. And they respond to tone. So all my dogs, I've used tone. So I definitely, and we get this feedback all the time, Max, like people in the courses who are like, so I didn't expect this to work. Our dogs are like, you know, and they've started working with even their other dogs at home, like their like their.
Well, I try it with Dougie, and he's not a certified therapy dog, and yeah, it's like it's awesome what you can do with. I mean, it doesn't have to just be with therapy dog training, but for some reason, people don't really talk about it. So
I know.
Like it's interesting that it's not more widely known. Dougie, I noticed with tone of voice, it's like different circumstances requires like different, yeah. Like sometimes it's just I can almost look at him and he like it's enough, and then other times he needs like more volume, not just. So yeah, it's I mean each dog's different, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's the arousal. Yeah, like I find like it's whatever level the dog's arousal's at is what's going to dictate how much tone they do or don't need. And because we've already got the dogs working quite well, and we've introduced them to the workplace with, expectations and boundaries and rules and stuff like that, like they're already better behaved than what they are at your house where you're not supervising them all the time. Like that's one huge difference of having them at the workplace versus at home. Like, I don't know what my dogs are doing right now. Like, because I'm busy doing this, whereas in the workplace, that doesn't happen. So it's like they don't have the opportunity to get really self-reinforced by doing things that they might do at home, when they might sneak around at home and get into your bin or counter surf or
Oh
whatever.
yeah, pushing the boundaries every once in a while, or the
Just a
barking at the
little.
window, or something that they wouldn't otherwise
Yeah.
do.
And like the times when you're not home and they're just like, great, this is a free for all. That doesn't happen in the workplace. So already, they need less help from you usually anyway, because there could environment's more controlled, you know what I mean?
Uncle, do you notice Jesse's? Like there's differences between home and when he's at work with you.
Yes, he knows.
Yeah.
So I'll put his little jacket on or his little triangular thing on, his bib on. And yeah, he knows. He knows he's so well behaved at work. But at home, he
Oh.
can be quite naughty, which is
Yeah.
lovely because, you want them to have personality. Oh, today,
100%.
he gets a mid-morning break. So I've changed my consulting around quite a lot. And, I'm lucky I can do this now at this stage of my life. So, oh, we have a decent break in the middle because he does get quite tired with patients, particularly if I've seen a lot of patients who he felt needed his care. So,
Yeah.
I took him out for a walk and we came past a bin, and next to the bin there was just a bag of oysters. Somebody's discarded just on, with still some bits and pieces on it. So absolutely the best thing a dog can think of, it
So
smells
smelly.
so smelly. Anyway, straight to it. And I just said, good boy. And then he no notice at all. He was as happy as anything. So I had to use the no. I had to take him away because, I didn't want him to go all into the fish and be smelly coming back
Of
into the
course
clinic. And
not.
from an hygienic point of view, I
No.
can't, when he's out there, he cannot do these sort of things.
Yeah, you don't want to be greeted by a therapy dog that's just eating oysters. Come
No.
give me a kiss.
No, no, no. So
No.
I had to use the red light, the no
Yeah.
in a very emphatic tone.
One of those moments.
And I had to correct him on the collar, and
Yeah.
take him away. But like we all have got our limits we have to obey by. And I don't feel bad doing this because he's a dog. I have to keep him safe. I have to keep my patient safe. So we
That's
have to
it.
sometimes use a tone of voice or use actions to keep everybody safe.
I have similar situations with Nala where she is just unhinged. She is she should
Unhinged.
see her at home. Like, man, this just another level. But I love that so much about
Yes.
her. Like, I would never want her to be different. She's the kind of dog. So I was trying to clone my older dog because he's the best dog in the world. And so I got this other, little yellow lab, and she is very, he has helped raise her. So she's very similar, but she's also a lab, so similar. But then now she's the best dog in the world, but also Oliver's the best dog in the world. So they're all the best dog in the world, which is great. But I would not change her. Like, she is so silly and she's full noise. Like, she's just flat tack all the time. I love it. Love that about her. So cute.
So
We never
cute.
ever want to lose that part of
No.
them ever. Like it's, but having these safe boundaries. Okay. So like, okay, I'll bring up Kiki, the LGD again. I know I bring her up all the time. It's because she's having a big impact on my life. Okay. So I don't know if the LGD could ever be off lead ever. Like I don't know, she's just a baby, but I just don't know if she ever could. Because she doesn't listen to me very well. So Nala and Oliver and Sunny, they get to go and swim in the dam in the horse paddock off lead because they, when they go to chase kangaroo, if a kangaroo comes through and they want to chase it and they get told no, they stop. If they see my neighbor walking her dog down the driveway and they start like they're going to go over and run over and see Leo, they get told no and they stop. And then what happens? So they get told no, that door is closed to you, but what is still open to you is the dam. So it doesn't have to be like no and now oh we can't be in the paddock
all
and we
fun's
can't,
over,
yeah, it's too risky out here, like it's, which I'm becoming even more aware of how risky it is down there because I'm walking Kiki down through the paddock in the mornings and I'm like, oh my god, like if I had this dog not on lead, like she'd be gone, like because it's not fenced. So I'm like, I'm just more aware right now. Like, wow. Like I took her down on the lead this morning and I took Nala with us off lead. And I used no concerns at all. And then Kiki wanted to go on the dam. So I had to like let go of the lead for a minute so she could like walk because I didn't want to get my feet wet. So I was wearing my new boots. And I was like, she's like walked in, like it was still shallow, but she'd walked in like 10 or 15 meters. And I was like, okay. And then she was like, okay, I'm coming back. And she like ran back towards me. And I was like, oh, this is good. And then she ran past me. And I was like, that's bad.
Oops.
And then she ran
so close.
like a long way that way. And I was like, uh-oh. And so I had to call Nala to me to try and get control because she wants Nala to play with her. So try and get control of the situation. I had to call Nala to me, which is like a 4.5-year-old Labrador that's full noise all the time. So she and I had, and then I had to go through about 2 more drive-bys from Kiki, who's going full noise, trying to get Nala to run off with her, right? And I've got Nala with me, and I'm like, Kiki, Kiki, come here. Oh my god, oh my god, I'm gonna lose this dog. There's no fences here. Uh-oh. I'm in my pajamas. I'm wearing my pajamas and my boots, just walking through the paddock at 6:30 in the morning because I can't be bothered getting clothes on in the paddock with one loose lunatic dog and one little low, and I'm going classic. Anyway, she came back, she was trying to get Nala and I just caught her.
Cheeky
but anyway
girl.
Good girl, Kiki, for not running away. But it made me more aware of like, man, my other dogs have so much freedom. Like, and it's because they don't do that shit. And it's because they were taught like, hey, it's not actually an option to ignore me when I recall you. And like, I don't have to, you know, have them 3 dogs on 10-meter long lines trying to let them, retrieve from the dam. And you know, like I take Sunny and Nala into the dam and they're sort of mucking around and then Oliver just like cruises. He doesn't really, he'll go in for a dip because he's very sensible. So he'll go in for a dip, but then he goes and, you know, does a little recon of the whole paddock and just checks out everything that's going on out there. Yeah, so it's like, you know, when they're in the workplace, those things actually translate to, you know, yeah, we've prepared these dogs so that they don't need much input from us in the workplace, much more controlled environment. But that translates back again as well to their everyday life where the dogs are getting to have so much enrichment, so much freedom, all this access to opportunities that they get because the handlers themselves even are so much more confident in their dogs and their relationship with their dogs and their ability to communicate with their dogs. That I just find that people are, the dogs are like living their best lives, even though they have to work hard during the day when they're at work. Hey, Anka, how many clients would you see in a day, do you think?
It's depending. It's really depending on what they're presenting with.
Yeah.
So probably maximum of 10, because I just work a half a day. I don't, he wouldn't, it would be unfair for him to do a full day. So with him, I only do a half a day and then
Now,
have a half an hour break in the middle. And it probably maximum would be 10, minimum about six. Very varied. My patients are usually much older because I've been here for such a long time. And yeah, so 27 years. And you imagine somebody who you
no,
started seeing at 60, they are now
that's amazing. That's
87.
pretty special.
My oldest is 109, which is old,
Wow.
but yeah, not obviously living in the community anymore. So I also go to nursing home patients, and therefore, the whole tone of voice is really important there as well, because you don't want to upset people. When you bring a dog in, it gives them so much joy, and you don't want to take any of that joy away. So in the nursing home, I would maybe see 10, and sometimes I take him, sometimes I don't, because again, if I have to go from room to room, that gets a little bit too difficult at times. Just particularly, again, going back to the tone of voice, some patient might have a chronic ulcerating wound, which might be having a discharge and a smell. So, the first thing a dog obviously also wants to go is go close to the wound. And again, the tone of voice is really good in stopping that without upsetting the patient, because you don't want any patient to feel like I'm holding the dog back. But yeah, to answer your question, probably in between 6 and 10, depending on the situations. Many, the other thing I thought of is, a therapy dog really something which would be sustainable for me, or is sensible for me, given my mainly older patients? But I actually found it brings them so much joy, because many of my patients are not able to have a dog anymore because of their life or health situations. And then the other day, somebody said, "Oh, I'm so glad to see Jessie." And I thought, great.
Oh,
It
that's
was,
so
they just come
lovely.
in to get a bit of attention, pet the dog. And Jesse is amazing. He lets them do everything. Whereas at home, if I would start fiddling with his ears or so, "Oh yeah, you've done that for long enough. Now let's do something else." Whereas with patients, particularly with older patients, he just looks into their eyes and just holds still. And that gives them their oxytocin boost as well. Everybody walks out happier. So it's a really beautiful thing. And I didn't quite expect it to work that well, but it's working actually really well. He's off lead, so I've got my routine. Again, the tone of voice when he's got two mats at the moment. He's under my table. That's a special mat where I know, okay, he wants to sleep and he doesn't want to be disturbed. And I don't then disturb him because he needs his break. And he's got a second mat, which is in the center of the room with toys. I can show you in a moment. And when he's on that mat, it means I'm free game. I'm happy to work. So when I call a patient in, the routine is that I tell him to stay on his mat, and I use a little tone of voice again there when I call the patient in. I let the patient walk into the room. I ask them if they wouldn't mind taking a seat. New patients don't know that that's what they have to do. They want to go straight over to the bed and touch him. I said, no, look, we need to be safe in here. Some of my patients are not so safe walking
And
anymore, or
frail and
are frail. And his routine is that once you're all safe, he will come and say hello to you. And then I say, free to him, and he goes up to the patient. And it's a really lovely routine. And then he sort of retreats back when he thought, yeah, okay, I said enough. I had enough cuddles now. But he's quite tolerant. Whereas if he's got a younger patient in here, he brings them a toy. So, "Oh, can you play with me, please?" He's just, he's quite, it's quite beautiful. He's quite intuitive. A patient who's got, who's quite sad, it's got quite, maybe very heavy grief issues, he actually goes really right, close to them. And then I can see what he's doing. So I can ask the patient before I say the good boy warning tone, He's going to give you a hug in a moment. Is this okay? He will put one paw onto your knee and then the other paw, and then he will lean right into you. Mm. And, you know, he does that. I haven't trained that. It's just something he knows, or with very anxious patients, he might just lay right next to their feet. It's amazing what dogs know and how they react to certain people. It fascinates me every time, brings me a lot of joy. So my consulting, has changed in the sense that I get out of my room at the end of my working morning, and I just think it's been a really lovely morning, because there was this added therapeutic element.
Absolutely.
In the room by a dog who does things in his own way, and that's why it's so lovely giving them that agency and not actually telling them off, you know, like no or leave it or you know, it looks all gentle, and therefore patients feel safe, because then we have this whole discussion about the vulnerability situation where patients might have disclosed more, and I think that disclosure is very much encouraged if they feel safe, and if they feel safe with the therapist, and the therapist shows that things are done gently in this room and not with any force. It's a lovely thing. You know, I never thought it would work out that way, but it has.
That's just so beautiful.
It is.
Anka, I never get sick of hearing these stories. And, you know, we had group supervision today and same thing, like multiple stories of the dogs and the magic that they are doing. One of the things that I think people can take from that as well is what you just said about the dog having their own agency. So when this can be hard to describe, although it sort of fits into what I was saying just before, like with the dam story, I have more ability to trust the dog and let the dog try something and let the dog have that agency and let the dog make decisions and let the dog, you know, initiate interactions. And I can have more of a wait and see, trial and error sort of approach, because I know that if the dog does something that I think, oh, that's not appropriate, I can get control of the situation again quite quickly because I've got this language with my dog. And I feel like that's that agency, the same thing like that you're talking about, but it's allows me to, rather than having a really structured interaction, like you've got a beautiful amount of structure there that I don't bother with, but I don't have the same client group.
No.
But I think that's, I would feel exactly what you said. Like I would feel super safe then, and I would feel looked after and nurtured in certain ways. Or, you know, if I was an old farmer, I might be like, oh, come on, love, you know, like whatever. Like I've got 25 working border collies at home. but I think that's very smart, a very smart way to deal with that client demographic. But it's got that level of structure. But then when I free the dog and now the therapy dog interaction is happening, that Jesse's got that ability to drive the interaction himself. And you've been able to learn just how intuitive he is and just how gentle he can be, rather than it having to be all the time that he's got to be on the lead because I don't know what he's going to do, or he's got to be on his place all the time because I don't know, because he's got to be over here all the time because I don't know what he's going to do. I think that's pretty cool.
No, we can't, you know, no, that would just take the magic away, I think. So while he wasn't certified, I had him on the lead, just also get him used to the environment. And it wasn't the same, you know. I was so glad when everything, all the boxes were ticked, you know, my T crossed, my I's dotted, you know. It was just, oh, wow, now he can really do what he can do best. And he's not on a lead in here. I always, most of my patients, I would say 90% of patients I know really well. Then they're the ones I've never seen before. So I always obviously get consent. You know, I have got a therapy dog in my room. Is this okay with you? I can put him on the lead while I'm walking them from the waiting area. And, you know, I never had anybody say, no, I want him on a lead. And patients can obviously say, you know, if they're intimidated by a dog, he's a small to medium size and he's fluffy.
Yeah.
So he's not a scary dog breed. So yeah, it makes it a little bit easier as well again. But yeah, it's just been patients have never felt intimidated or so. So I never had to put him on a lead for that. And even if I have to examine the patient behind the curtain, I always let patients know, look, you know, he will not come around the curtain. He's a gentleman. So he stays, you know. He stays on the mat, because I quickly, you know, throw in a little bit of a, you know, good boy again, because I don't want patients to feel like there is a dog present when they feel more vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, it's, and just the soul training has made this so easy, because I don't say on your mat in a firm voice. I just sort of, you know, with a certain tone of voice, you know, good boy.
Yeah.
Off I go. And nobody knows. And they're just thinking, you know, I've just said hello to the dog and told him what a good boy he is.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
Have and you
it
noticed?
Works its way. Sorry, you go.
Sorry. Uncle, have you noticed that Jesse has sort of evolved in his, like, sort of skills with clients? Like, how has that changed from when he sort of started to now?
Look, he was always signaling to me when I met, when, for example, I only became aware of it, I thought he was naughty. So I've had a few friends who've gone through tough times. Like one of my friends, her sister had breast cancer. Another one, it was the anniversary of the death of her husband. Another friend was going through a really hard time with her daughter having anorexia and so on. And what he was doing whenever one of my friends came around, he wanted to jump up on them. And I thought, this is so naughty, what a naughty puppy. And then I would correct him. And I wasn't getting it until on one occasion, I just had enough of him jumping up and pulling on his lead. I just popped him on my arms and then held him close to my friend. My friend was petting him, and then I put him down on the floor again. And he was fine. He wasn't doing that anymore. And then I realized maybe he was telling me something, you know, maybe he wanted to make me aware of something. And from then onwards, I have then lifted him up when he would not let go of a person, and, you know, I would hold him up to that person, I would give him a pat, and he was fine. So so obviously he can't do that with patients. He can't jump up on patients. So I've noticed that he has evolved into this, okay, I need to give this person a hug. It's almost like, you know, that person is very upset. Or earlier on, I had a patient who had had a certain surgery on one of her body limbs. And he was just looking at me, pointing back to that particular body part, looking back at me again, like, you know, do you know this person had a bit of an amputation? And I would say to him, yes, Jesse, I know she's all okay, I know. And it was, you know, forwards, backwards a few times, and then he just leaned right into her and gave her that hug again. And I thought, how beautiful. It's like, oh yeah, I know that one of your body parts is missing, and I really feel and, you know, I said, I could see what was happening. You get this feeling, okay, he's going to go and give her a hug. And fortunately, this particular patient had a dog as well, and she was extremely happy to get a Jesse hug. But it was just, you know, it's just a beautiful thing to watch, and him looking back at, you know, okay, can you see, you know, and is it there? And then again, you know, I had to correct him with a good boy, because he was going to put his nose too close to the wound if otherwise, and it was all wrapped up, but still, you know, there is, I'm very aware of the safety limits, and I want him to realize, okay, you indicated to me, but it's good now, I understand that you indicated.
Yeah.
So, you know, Yes, so he has evolved, and probably because now he can, he has got that agency of moving around in the room, of bringing a toy. I don't see many children, but when there is a kid in the room, a young person, even if it's just a not a patient, maybe a family member, school holidays, you know, the whole tribe comes in.
Yeah.
He gets very, very excited. He, I think he would love to work with kids, and then, oh, can I bring her this toy? And I've got toys, you know, which are very long, so I know it makes it just easy for the kids to throw, and
it's
fun. It's interesting to see how he interacts with different people, different age groups, and how he changes his demeanor from an energetic dog to an absolute mellow dog.
Very intuitive.
I reckon the dogs have got it sussed a lot of, like, I reckon we don't give them enough credit on, like, I know some dogs are just out of control. But I reckon, like, especially, it's okay, like, let's use you, Uncle, as an example, and Jesse. You guys are working together as a team, like, really well. Like, I feel like you know your dog, and I think your dog knows you. And when you're working together as a team like that, I think it makes sense that we can give our little co-pilot, our co-therapist, a say. Like, they, I think they actually are pretty, they're super smart. Dogs are smart. I have a few questions about Nala. I don't know about Nala, but most dogs, very smart. So I reckon my dogs aren't like Jesse in terms of how empathic they are. But I know lots of people whose dogs are, like, lots of our graduates, their dogs are very similar. And I reckon they choose their patients and the way that they interact with their patients wisely. I think that the dogs know.
They do.
That's where I feel like it's so liberating, maybe is the word, to be able to, like, give your dog the reins to an extent and, trust them. Because generally speaking, he doesn't jump up on people he doesn't know, or he doesn't give hugs to people that don't want a hug. And he doesn't do, you know, generally speaking, he makes good choices. So
yes, he does.
I feel like that gives you a bit of more of an ability to go, well, he's making some of the choices in here. Mm. And I think that makes it a lot easier to work with your dog in a team when you can trust a lot of the choices that they make. I guess it's like people, if you've got, you know, a pet dog at home that you trust around your kids, like if your kids are not out of control, and you trust your dog around the kids, it's kind of like that. Like they generally make good choices. And so the dogs have earned that. And then, like I said, like there's that added level of risk. Like if your dog knocks over your own kid, that's fine. That's different to if your dog knocks over someone else's kid in a work setting. So
not so ideal.
Not ideal at all. I just wanted to touch on as well, Anka, is the self-care aspect of being able to work with Jesse. This work that we do as the clinician, it can be so isolating.
Yes, it
does. Especially because we're in our rooms all day, and people come in and out the door. And that's why I had that question about the number of clients, because it occurred to me while we were talking that your sessions would be shorter usually than mine. And also occurred to me, of course, now obviously it makes sense thinking about it, but your clients are, like, all unwell. So like, there would also be that added level of stress of, and especially, you know, being in the same place for 27 years as well, you're very invested in your patients. So, and they're going through something, whether it's that grief that you talked about or a physical condition or whatever it might be.
Yep.
It would be heavy stuff. And we've got, you know, confidentiality requirements and things like that. And we're in our rooms all day by ourselves with people, like a revolving door of just, like, stuff that's going on. So people can burn out, like clinician burnout's quite high, compassion fatigue is quite high. Just the way that you were talking about having Jesse in the room before, I thought it sounded like he really is like a partner to you, and he's a great support to you as well. And it sounds like that's helps you to better support your patients. Is that,
Yes.
am I getting that right?
Well, I think having just some other support in the room is quite lovely. It's, how shall I say this? It's quite an interesting thing, because the conversations start already a little bit different. It's in country areas, often when people go to the doctor, you talk about the weather. It's a lovely opener. And usually when patients come now in to see me, they say, oh, and how is Jessie today? And it's already, you know, it already puts a smile on their face. And, oh, Jessie is asleep today, I'm so sorry. Because if they come after the break, Jessie usually has a little kip. So, you know, then, oh, well, we better let him sleep then. So patients know. So for me, just to normalize also, you know, there are times when he is, for example, fatigued and he doesn't want to interact, normalizes for me also. Yes, we all have got our times when we are actually a bit more tired. And I think my biggest advantage now having this dog is going for the mid-morning break, going for a walk, because I feel I owe it to him. So I've got an hour break, but I usually only ever get 25 minutes because I usually run late, nature of the beast. So I take him out, but I will never ever deprive him of anything less than 20 minutes. And it's as soon as we are off towards the beach area, he's off lead and he can do his sniffing. And I can then think, you know, I can reflect about some of the patients I've seen, or I might not. I might just block it all out and just sniff the roses, so to speak, you know, just listen to the birds. And that's actually really fantastic for self-care, because it's balancing. You know, I just balance and I'm refreshed. I'm ready to give more when I'm back in the clinic. So from that point of view, self-care, I think it's amazing. But also when I come back, or when before I go past the treatment room, making sure there isn't anybody there who I need to sign something off for. And then I let them know, we're just going to find a tree. So, you know, they're all laughing, because it's a nice way to say I'm going for a break. And all of the different type of lingo, then we come back and we walk past the reception and we walk past the patients, and they see Jessie, and there might be a little child who goes, oh, and smiles. Or the other day there was a patient, it wasn't one of my patients, in a wheelchair, and she was pointing at the dog, and then her carer said, look, you know, she would really love to interact with the dog, would that be okay? And I know I can pick Jessie up. The copper dog, most of them have this temperament. When you put them on somebody's lap, they go all limp, like a rag doll.
Really? So, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's amazing. No, I show you in a moment. As I said, he's asleep. I said many times I'll show you, but I will show you before we finish. So, so you know, I popped him on her lap because I knew he was safe. And I spoke to the carer, now, is it okay? And it made her day. And, you know, she wasn't able to verbalize very much, but the carer said afterwards, you know, that really made her day. And that made my day, because it was the simplest gesture I could do, you know, just lift him on this person's lap, and she was petting him. And, you know, just watching that is just, it's just lovely. Life can be sometimes so very simple, and having those very simple moments is just very beautiful to see. Like when we have dogs, they very much restrict us in terms of travel, in terms of what we can do. And I discussed this with my husband, and I said, look, you know, I can go away and might have 30 days of holidays in a year, but, you know, if I've got the dog there are many more than 30 days where I feel like I'm on holidays, just because we can go out for a walk. We can just, when he sniffs, you know, my eyes go to where his nose goes, what is there? And it's just, you know, it's just, you want to make sure they don't pick anything up, like the old chicken bones, which sometimes lie around. But, you know, it's just, it takes your mind off things. And in terms of self-care, coming back to that, I think it's a very dogs can level you very much, and they tell you also when you're off track and when you need to, you know, get yourself back together again. And it's a lovely thing.
Couldn't agree more with that. I think it's we've discussed that actually, haven't we, Max, with a few people that we've spoken to on the podcast about those walks that we have to do during the day to walk the dogs, and how just something as simple as that, which we all know, like get outside, and I mean it sucks when it's raining, but you know, get outside and
those have been some of my most favorite like walks though, like when no one else is around and it's just, it can be beautiful and you just hear your footsteps and their footsteps and
That's a bit cute, Max.
It is.
I, when it's raining, I walk the dog out and as quickly as I can let them off their lead and in a non-allowed area where I can stand under the Bee Gees Way roof, which is over the concrete. Because the other side of BG's Way is the grass where they go to the toilet. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, off you go. Stand under the roof. And then I just like full, like, keep an eye out for like, yeah. I'm like, going to get a fine one of these days. But anyway, then you have to dry the dog when they go back. Oh, and it's a pain.
Cause that is a bit annoying. Dougie has a raincoat though. So it does help a lot. Yeah.
That's very cute.
It's very cute.
Jesse has one as well, because I can't bring him in when he's soaking wet and expect patience of course, to be comfortable. Now petting him because wet he's so woolly. Hug. Dog hug, it's no. No.
It actually is a real pain if they get wet. The other thing that I think I'm hearing as well is that when someone's in the room and they have something quite heavy going on for them, a part of your job is, you know, obviously to be compassionate and to provide support, like mentally and emotionally, as well as see to the medical side of what's going on. So is there times when you feel like Jesse is able to take some of the load off of you to provide some of that support, even that tactile side of things? Because we're, you know, in my role, we're not supposed to give clients hugs and stuff like that. And so they can just be sitting there crying and you just are like, oh, this is sad. Do you ever find that Jesse is alleviating some of that side of the work for you? And does that ever even sort of package things up a little bit more easily, or, you know, does it ever make it so that you can be clearer in your mind? And you know, obviously you've got a really important job with managing people's prescriptions and stuff like that. Like, is that stuff ever impacted, do you think?
No, I don't think so. You know, I know where Jesse's limitations are and where my work is, and I've worked solo, flying solo for 26 years because Lee, I had to crate Lee most of the time. Lee wasn't, you know, I was not, I just wanted to make sure he was not causing any mischief with those puppy teeth. So, no, I think I learned to fly solo. And as you're saying, that can be very demanding. It can be very lonely. And the last thing you want to burden your colleagues with, or because they have got their full load as well, is what might have happened within my room. So yes, you take a lot of things home with you. However, I think just, I don't see Jesse taking that load off. It's just him having an effect of balancing me again. For example, often I meet with another person after, maybe sometimes after work, definitely Tuesdays and Thursdays early in the morning, and we meet on the beach and he brings his KP along, and those two just having the best time, you know, off lead, running around. And then in between we do some obedience exercises, because he's, and I'm now in the same group, so level four, so it's going to be a lot of off-lead work. So I want to make sure that Jesse knows when he's at obedience, it's not playtime. You know, he still has to do his other work, which is interesting. And I might digress there quickly while I've got this in my mind with obedience. Once we started the TDA training, he actually jumped up two levels because I was using the tone of voice. I was using the tone of voice in the training as well. And it was just probably that missing link, which I felt was really helping him to understand, okay, now we are doing this now, which was really good because, yes, some of the trainer are more gentler based, some use more the old fashioned way. And depending who you had as a trainer, you would have encountered certain methods. And, you know, that was quite good. But going back to playing on the beach, having a run, you know, this is for me every time like a holiday. It's just such a simple thing. And I'm so grateful to have that simple thing because it's balancing and meeting, for example, after work, if we had a really busy day, it just falls off. You know, it falls off when you see this dog having fun. And I think there might be similar saying in English as well, you know, if you share somebody's journey, actually doubles the fun.
So I love that.
So, you know, I'm doubling my fun just watching him. And so from that point of view, directly at work, he's not probably taking the load off. It's just lovely that he's an empath and that he can feel certain things and that validates what I can sense. And that's quite nice. So, you know, as you're saying, we're working at a team. Yes, Jesse, I know. And then you don't feel like you're as much solitary in the room anymore. I won't call it alone, it's just solitary. Loneliness is a different kettle of fish altogether. So
I can definitely relate to that. Like the joy that you get when you see like your dogs having fun or
playing.
Yeah, like imagine the same with you, Sam, like launching into the dam. Like it's just it lifts your spirits.
Oh, that's 100%. Why I let Kiki's lead go this morning.
Yeah, I mean, it's
because
like
she looked so like fun. She really was enjoying walking into the dam. And I was like, who am I to hold you back from this joyful moment? And so I was just making a little video of her because she was so cute and happy and curious. And then the video is of her running full steam towards me. And then there's no more video. And then...
And we're back to where we started.
And 100%, I would say the huge majority of stupid things I've done in the past have been to watch my dogs have fun. I'm like, YOLO, let's get lit, guys. And then like, it is actually, obviously some people have human children and they would be like, you're an idiot. But I don't know if there's much that can bring you more joy than watching your dogs play or have fun or like,
top of
you know,
the
when
list.
They like find, you know, like when they find something new and their like brains explode over it.
Yes.
So cute. Yeah. It's just the best.
Dougie loves parading. So, and it doesn't even have to be new, but like whatever it is that day. And it is just, it never gets old. Like it could be the same toy that he always brings me, but it never gets old. And it's so cute. And he does this thing where he'll have a toy in his mouth because he resource guards. So we're always working on, you know, feeling safe to share toys with me. So, He will now do this thing where he'll jump up and want to shove it in my face and like show me. And he'll have it in his mouth and he's like breathing through his mouth and like, look at this. And he's like, just like hoping I'll take it. And then it'll like turn into a game. Or maybe sometimes it's like, oh, maybe I'm not so sure that I want it to be a game. But either way, it's like this, I've got this thing, Mom. And like, you can't think of anything else. Like your brain shuts off. 100%. If you're in like a stressful state or whatever's going on, it's just that very moment you're so present with 100%. Like this gorgeous dog. Best feeling.
Jesse does this when he gets a new toy. So when he passed his TDA assessment, I thought, oh, he deserves a new toy. So I got him a new toy. And then he was running around forwards, backwards. And when my husband came home, look what I got, you know, and then makes this little noise. It's like, oh, look, you know, it's my toy, but I won't give it to you. So he would come forwards and backwards and just show his toy off. And it was beautiful. And yes, you do get the same joy. It's most beautiful joy with children as well.
Yeah.
You know, when they have fun and you can watch them and enjoy life. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I think we've lost Sam. So just the weird dropout is because we've just lost Sam because her Wi-Fi dropped out, but we're gonna wrap up with Dr. Anka. So do you wanna get Jesse?
I will get Jesse. I just need to wake him. Jesse. Come on here.
Oh, has he been in? Oh, hi, Jesse. Oh.
So this is
such a teddy bear.
He's so, oh, you're so tired.
Big yawn.
Here we go. So, and that's what he does. You know, he goes all, okay, then. If I can sit on your lap here, yeah, I'm just going back to sleep. But, you know, at home, don't get this wrong. He can be full of beans, you know.
Yeah.
It's just his, okay, I know what I have to do here.
I love it. And so this is what he does with some clients who are happy with him on their lap?
I never put him on a client's lap. The patient in the wheelchair, I was walking him out in the in the waiting room area, and I was just approached by the carer because she had seen him walk across prior to that. And she just said, look, you know, it would make my client's day if he could just say hello to her. And I said, well, do you want me to put him on her lap? Is that something she would enjoy? Because she wasn't very much verbal.
Mm.
And, you know, she just said, oh, it would make her day.
Oh, that's beautiful. So that was just an isolated moment.
It was an isolated moment, but sometimes we have got very young children in the clinic. Quite a few of my colleagues do obstetrics. And the other day I had this, I would have probably guessed him about maybe 20 months old little child just running because he looked so much teddy bear like, just running to him, left his dad's hand. Running to him and just wanted to touch him. What I always have got some treats on me, so I always got some kibble on me. And whenever a child runs towards him, I've always been giving him treats. So he associates children with this is something good in life.
Really positive. Yeah,
really association. Positive. And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. He would just really love to pet him. And I always make him drop with children because then he realizes, okay, it's a nice safe position and it's a vulnerable position for him, understand that, but patient safety and with a little one is paramount. And then they can touch him on the side, but then I also have got a bit more control because I'm there just in case, you know, this all needs to be safe. And then I direct everybody, there's the hand sanitizer just up here because obviously any patient interaction in here, they need to have this hand sanitized.
Yeah, of course. So,
you know, it's just, it's just interesting with a dog because you always have to have your eyes on almost like 360 because this child came just all of a sudden from nowhere. And quickly.
Drop. They're always very fast.
They are very fast.
The younger they are, the faster they are somehow.
But fortunately, he made some noise, so I could hear him coming like a fire engine. So funny.
I imagine Jesse gets that a lot, though, even like outside of the clinic.
He does.
Dougie's a Groodle, so he's also got that teddy bear quality, and it's the same thing when we're out and about and we get kids coming from all directions. You just got to be ready at all times.
No, it's a very interesting thing, but you see, now he's just sitting here completely.
Totally flopped. Oh, I'd love a cuddle.
You're a good boy, aren't you?
We'll wrap it up there, but thank you so much, Anka. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. That's my pleasure. You have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
See you, Maxine. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.